This is Mike Dolce.
Ian McCall. Jan's Little Evil Pulver.
The Crippler Chris Leaving.
Frank the Legend Shamrock.
Bruce Buffer, your voice of the UFC Octagon. And now, we are live at Talking Balls.
And we are back to Talking Brawls, Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. Your host, as always, Niall McGrath and Mark Moriarty. Coming off, obviously, a wonderful weekend of fights. Three title changes in Bellator. Obviously, most notably, Michael Chandler losing his belt to Eddie Alvarez. And King Mo being upset again by Emmanuel Newton. And also, we had Daniel Strauss defeating Pat Kern to become the new featherweight champion of Bellator. Mark, first off, how are you keeping, mate? How are things?
Grand, bit shaky head, was out last night, had to watch the Bellator card this morning. Pretty crazy card, a lot of upsets for the book. A good one overall, not a pay-per-view worthy card, but a card.
Fight of the year, Mark?
Bellator fight of the year.
I'd agree, definitely, Mark. It was a very entertaining fight. Both guys are warriors, and hats off to both guys. Okay, guys, obviously on the show today, we have a stacked lineup as per usual, Mark. Speaking of weight, I wasn't really speaking of weight, but weight classes. Mike Dolce joins us on the show to talk all things John Lineker, Johnny Hendricks, Cody Bollinger. Speaking of Cody Bollinger, we have Cody Bollinger also on the show today. Obviously, his exit from TUF during the week was well highlighted. He missed weight and was subsequently thrown out of the house by Dana White, but has signed a lucrative six-figure deal with World Series of Fighting this week. So we catch up with Cody also later on the show. Also on the show today, Fight of the Troops obviously takes place this week. A doubleheader, Mark, this week. We also have Belfort versus Hendo in Brazil on Saturday night. But two fighters on the card for Fight of the Troops. Two returning guests to Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts podcast. We have Dennis the Menace Bermudez and James Krause. So good interviews coming up with those guys, so stay posted. Mark, how did you enjoy the card last? And obviously, we'll talk about a little bit Bellator first. Was it up to your standards?
Well, unfortunately, Noel, I was out at a birthday last night, so I ended up having to do the classic moment when you catch up with it in the morning and watching it on replay. But I was watching a lot of the instant feedback coming off Twitter, and I think there was a lot of people a bit disenfranchised over here that they weren't able to get it on Viva TV, that they're still showing the cards a week in delay. But I don't know. The picture that I'll take out of it is Bjorn Rebney's sad, sad face as he had to strap the belt around Eddie Alvarez, his arch nemesis, but waist. It was just, it was almost heartbreaking to see that happen. What did you think of the fight? I would have probably scored it for Alvarez, and I thought he did just enough, but a real, real contender for fight of the year for Bellator anyway.
Definitely, Mark. I'd probably give it to obviously Chandler as well. I think the fight itself, good contender for fight of the year, but Bellator fight of the year, exactly, Mark. It was a good fight. Both guys absolute warriors, and yeah, I would have scored it for Eddie Alvarez. I don't know what Jimmy Smith was thinking, on the commentary, but really good fight. And also, we have to mention Emmanuel Newton upsetting the odds again to make it a straight 2-0 over King Mo. So really good performance from him. He was dominant. He kept his range so good in the last three rounds of the fight, and King Mo just couldn't get close to him with the takedowns, etc. And he really did. He landed some nice shots on King Mo, and definitely in my eyes took the decision victory. And he moves onwards and upwards to get a shot to unify those light heavyweight title belts. So it's going to be interesting stuff for him. And also on the card, we had a friend of the show we've had on before, Daniel Strauss. He defeated Pat Kern to become the new featherweight world champion in Bellator. And you have to give credit to Daniel Strauss. He's known as a grinder, and he implemented that game plan all night long up against the fence. He had no answer for what Daniel Strauss threw at him. And Pat Kern, he is a tough guy, and you have to take your hats off to Daniel Strauss, a new featherweight champion. Kern never really got into the fight. He was, it just looked as though he just couldn't seem to get anything going, Mark. I think it was, it looked like it sort of passed him by, the title fight. It was one of those situations where I don't think, in fairness to Daniel Strauss, you got to give him credit as well, because he didn't let him do anything. And I think that's, testament to Daniel Strauss's game plan. perfect.
Yeah, I don't think anyone really expected Daniel Strauss to be able to pull this one out of the bag. I think a lot of people were picking Pat Curran coming into this. What a result from him. He's a grinder. He's a guy who's had a lot of troubles over the last time. I think even both of us had actually picked Curran for this one. And it was a shocking night of upsets. I don't know what you do with King Mo now if you're Bellator. Genuinely, maybe he could drop down a weight class, because I know he used to wrestle. His amateur wrestling career was mostly spent at a lighter weight class. But really, like, he's found his kryptonite in a fighter who he just looked awful. It was really, really bad night for Bellator, and the guys who they have a lot of stock invested in, I just don't think the card came true. As a TV product, it was fantastic, but Jesus, thank God this didn't come out in pay-per-view, because it would not have left happy customers at the end of the night.
Definitely, Mark, definitely. And, you know, another fight that we mentioned as well, it wasn't the best fight in the world, Mike Bronzulis versus Joe Riggs. Riggs, you know, eked out a 30-27 decision, deserving win for Joe Diesel Riggs. You know, it's given Joe another opportunity to, you know, give it another crack at the top level. So it's going to be interesting to see what the future holds for Mr. Joe Riggs and Mike Bronzulis. He takes home $100,000 to his Mr. Diesel. So a nice night's work for him. And, you know, giving his he's in the tourney now, which is great for him. So Mark, okay, Bellator over. No, great fight. You have to, you know, hats off to Eddie Alvarez and Michael Chandler. Obviously, they're going to do it again, which is going to be exciting. A third fight, and I think you know, if win or lose, Eddie's going to be in the UFC after that fight, by the looks of it. So, fair play to Eddie Alvarez for retaining his belt, and congratulations to Bellator putting on a good card after obviously having to pull the card from pay per view last week. Mark. Let's get talking a little bit about The Ultimate Fighter. We've Cody Ballinger up next, obviously, here on the show. Your overall thought on the series this, or the episode this week, a very interesting episode. You know, I've really invested, as I've mentioned to you, in The Ultimate Fighter this year. It's grabbed my attention, and from previous shows, you know, I've criticised The Ultimate Fighter, but definitely this season I'm invested, obviously, with the women. You know, I don't mean that in a sort of a sexist manner, but no, great fights from the women and, you know, the guys, obviously. There's been a good storyline or something every week, and obviously the unfortunate instance happened with Cody Ballinger. It really did bring to light more of the issues at weight. Obviously, we talked to John Lineker, I did, at the press conference in Manchester a couple of weeks ago. What's your thoughts on The Ultimate Fighter so far, and especially this episode, Mark?
I thought this episode was one which it's quite shocking, actually. I only just realised this, but it actually is the all-time lowest viewership for an episode of The Ultimate Fighter, which I think was mostly down to the World Series win for the Red Sox on the night in question. I even noticed that most of the MMA purists on Twitter were going Red Sox and World Series mad on trending-wise. It was a weird show to watch. A great, great show, because it was really highlighting something which... It had a proper narrative to it. Cody's story in that, like, it was vaguely sad to watch. And for someone who, if someone didn't watch MMA and had to sit down and watch that, I think they'd be a little bit disgusted in kind of how they tried, how much the body has to be pushed to that level, to the point of breaking point. And it just, when you see the collapse of someone who's trying to fight for his family and just giving up on himself and just couldn't go anymore. It's a hard thing to watch. It was a good show. It didn't get the rating, but Christ, it delivered on the telling a story anyway.
Definitely, Mark. I really enjoyed it again, and we'll get to the next interview of the day now. We might as well, because it's in relation to The Ultimate Fighter, obviously. And stay posted, because Cody, I don't think, was too happy with Misha Tate's comments when he sat down with Ronda Rousey and Dana White. So check it out, guys, and we'll be back to talk all things Fight for the Troops. Check it out.
This is the Big Wheel, Sean Wheelock, and you are listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to welcome on the show Cody Ballinger, former TUF contestant after this week, and now World Series of Fighting fighter. Cody, first of all, before we get talking about The Ultimate Fighter, how did the contract with World Series of Fighting come about?
I had permission from some of the head people at UFC and the show production people that I could start reaching out, as long as nothing came out publicly. So I'd been talking to a couple of promotions, and they stuck out the most. They offered the best contract in more than one way, and it was an easy choice for me. You know, and they kept it real simple. Yeah. I didn't, need to debate back and forth with them. I got what I wanted first time, and they got what they wanted, and it's an easy choice for me, and I'm excited, man.
Yeah, good stuff. I know previously you fought for Bellator once against Shabalat Shamalayev. Did they have any contact with you at all as well?
No, not at all.
Okay, awesome. All right.
Well, first of all, Cody, I wonder just what was it like to keep stum and keep quiet about what had went on in the show for the last few months, and what was it like to watch what was obviously a torturous ordeal for you to go through with that weight cut, to watch it play out in screen? Did you feel the editing was true to the story, and what was it like for you and family and friends to watch that play out?
As far as leading up to it, it was pretty crappy, man, because, you know, you can't give away how you did.
Yeah.
You have to seem upbeat and excited and, you know, about every episode. And, you know, knowing that was eventually going to happen, I felt like I was kind of living a lie. You know, I had to lead on this false, you know, excitement when I knew what happened. But as far as when it aired, you know, it was kind of crappy. And, you know, there was a little editing, which, you know, I think they did the best they could showing how it happened with the time slot they have. And having to show the other fight and everything, there were some parts, you know, that I didn't like, but, you know, nothing crazy that I feel like I have to speak out about. They did the best they could, and I was happy with how it was showed. They captured it the best way they could. You know, when it did air, though, you know, after the episode was over, the next day, man, no lie, I woke up and I was happy, you know, for the first time. Since that day happened, you know, I woke up happy and just felt like, you know, it was a new day and I can start moving forward. You know, I got to announce about World Series and I feel like I can move forward now. So, you know, since that episode aired, it's been, you know, sky's the limit for me.
Making such a severe cut, what was it like for you to, was it the issue of having cameras and not having your regular team around you and your regular support system around you? What's it like to go through something like that with cameras following you around and looking for a reaction? Is it almost provocative and looking for a reaction out of you?
Yeah, it's a lot harder than I expected, man. You know, Dana White gave a speech when we got into there. He said, you know, a lot of people say Bellator is the toughest tournament. Bullshit. This is the toughest tournament you will ever go through. And, you know, I kind of snickered and, you know, grinned at it. You know, I was like, okay, well, you know, we'll see. And, you know, a week in, I realized why. Because you don't know when you're fighting. You don't have your regular coaches, your regular camp, like you said, your support system, training schedule. Everything is different. You get, you know, dumped on your head. And hopefully you can, you know, get back up on your feet and start running and adjust to it. And it was a lot harder than I expected it to be. And, you know, I didn't adjust the way I should have, and I paid for that.
And, Cody, I know you probably fought a featherweight, and obviously was at 135 in the Ultimate Fighter House. Was there any regrets, you know, looking back on the show now, that you actually went in and fought at that weight class instead of, you know, possibly just, you know, sticking around and maybe waiting for an Ultimate Fighter featherweight season?
No, not at all, man. I mean, obviously, I regret pissing off and disrespecting, you know, the whole Ultimate Fighter series by missing weight and disrespecting the UFC. That's the only thing I regret about that, you know, is disrespecting the sport by missing weight. That was the first time I've ever missed weight in my life. That's the only thing I regret. But, I mean, besides that, how can I? You know, I got exposure that I would have never gotten in my life. I'm 22, you know, I've still got 10 years left in the sport if I stay healthy to compete and come back. And I got an amazing contract from World Series of Fighting. You know, there's nothing to regret from this. I mean, I wish I would have adjusted better, and, you know, but that's all you can do is just move forward, and that's what I'm doing.
Cody, to lay people or people who aren't really into the sport or don't know the sport and might have been just into the watching the show on Fox Sports 1, I think people would find it almost more horrific and torturous to watch someone go through the weight cut and go through having all those issues to go through than the actual fight itself. Do you think that anything could be improved in mixed martial arts and weight cutting, like same day weigh-ins, or anything could be taken from boxing or amateur wrestling?
You know, I've grown up wrestling my whole life, amateur, and I liked how, you know, you weighed in 2 hours before you competed. As far as fighting, I think it's a whole different beast. I think the way it is now is fine. If they did adjust it, I wouldn't be opposed to that. I wouldn't disagree with having same-day weigh-ins at all. that would play in my favor tremendously. You know, going back to 45s, I would go back to 45s if they did same day land, and you know, I would feel like a freaking monster.
Yeah.
You know, but I mean, I don't see too much. I mean, I think the sport is young and everybody is still adjusting and finding the best way. You know, every day there's a new way to make weight, there's a new way to diet. And it's something really new, you know, and there's a lot of research and it's really scientific on how to do it. Mm. And I think the sport's just too young right now for the weight, the drastic weight cuts that people are attempting. You know, people get by and do it, but I mean, it's not just me who misses weight, you know.
Yeah, of course.
People miss weight all the time. I mean, Whitaker, he just missed his third fight out of five fights with the UFC. And, you know, it's something that we haven't figured out to a T yet, and that's going to continue to happen for the next, you know, 5-10 years until it's a real science, and until, you know, we really divulge and dive down deep into it on the best way to do it. And you know, we're still learning right now.
Exactly. And speaking of science, we've had a man on, Mike Dalshy, on the show a number of times, and I believe that you've reached out to Mike to possibly help work with you. What's the situation with that?
I'm going to have a call with him tomorrow and hopefully work something out, man. I heard he's a great guy. I've talked to some of the guys he works with, and, you know, just to make sure it's not just another sponsorship and they're saying that he's great. I've heard great things about him from everyone that I've talked to, and I'm excited. You know, I've got a call with him tomorrow.
And are you going to work? Are you going to stay at 135, or are you going to go back to your normal featherweight?
No, yeah, I'm staying at 135s, man. I can make the weight, and hopefully with Mike Dolce, I can make it and easier ways.
You started in this sport crazy early. You're a 7-year vet at 22, which just doesn't make sense mathematically to me. But what have you seen change? Did you have kind of old school kind of ethos from the amateur wrestling days? And were you kind of still have that kind of cutting weight mentality where you'd punish yourself? And if you had to kind of get up in the whole nutritionist stuff now over time?
Yeah, I'm one of the most ignorant people when it comes to nutrition, to be honest. You know, like you said, I've come from the old school wrestling. You know, we obviously dieted, but I've never known the scientific side of weight cutting. And that's something that I, you know, attempted to learn the best I could before I went in the house for the 2-month period that I had. But it's something I still really have to learn about. And you know, I'm excited to. It's, you know, you're always learning in this sport, and people think it's just learning how to throw a combo or learning how to, you know, finish this takedown, but there's a lot more into it, like the weight cutting and the scientific side of that. And, you know, that's one of the things I'm going to be focusing on from now on, obviously.
How did you start so early in the sport, and what made you, what was the Ultimate Fighter, or what was the first thing that drew you into the sport as a whole?
I had started wrestling when I was 4 years old, and during the off season to stay, you know, in shape for when wrestling season came back around, I would do grappling and, you know, train with, you know, the mixed martial artists that were also at the gym. And, you know, I ended up being pretty decent at it. I had an opportunity to, fight in Costa Rica where, you know, I mean, when I was 15, there weren't amateur, you know, there was no amateur promotion back then. So my first fight ever was pro, and that happened in Costa Rica. You know, it was just a fluke. They needed a guy my size, and they took the risk by letting a 15-year-old fight, and it worked out, you know, for both of us.
Brilliant stuff. And Cody, when, you know, Dana White showed you the door on the episode during the week, was there any dialogue with the UFC after? I know you had to speak to them about signing the contract with WSOF, but what was the dialogue like with the brass and the UFC? Was there anything that they might have you back in maybe a few years time, or what way did you leave terms with the UFC?
Yeah, they basically, man, they told me to win a couple fights and I'm allowed back. They said, go win some good fights, you know, win impressively, and we'll have you back. I really took that into consideration with, you know, who I signed with. But World Series made a great offer. And, you know, as long as it plays out like it says on the contract with World Series, I wouldn't mind staying with them for more than a couple fights at all. They're a great young promotion.
Yeah.
I feel I'm a great young fighter. And I feel like we could both, you know, blow up together as a promotion and as a fighter and really do great things. And, you know, I'm not concerned with being back in the UFC right now. I just want to fight. I want to fight good top-level guys.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got good guys. They're trying to sign the best guys they can. They've got Marlon Moraes, who's an incredibly tough fight, who I look forward to fighting eventually. And as long as they can provide the talent, you know, and the competition that I want, then, you know, I'll stay with them for as long as, you know, I can, you know. And then if there's a day where they can't provide talent anymore that competes with me, and, you know, I keep rising like I plan to, then, you know, maybe I'll make a change in a different promotion. But for now, I'm focused on, you know, winning my fights under contract with the World Series. And, you know, I wouldn't mind re-signing with them at all. They're a great company. They've taken care of me so far, and I haven't even fought for them. And I'm really impressed with how they carry themselves and take care of their fighters, you know. So I'm not really worried about the UFC right now, you know, just working on building my name and branding myself, and I'm happy to do that with World Series.
Definitely. Ray Sefo's doing a great job there at World Series of Fighting. Could you just you know, when Dana showed you the door, and we know, we've seen on your stint during the show, you're a big, big family man, family means everything to you. What was it like? Can you describe the emotions, you know, going home to tell your wife what happened, et cetera, like that, once you got back home from out of the house?
It was hard, man. It was a hard, you know, probably month or two dealing with it. You know, obviously my wife really supported me. She didn't take any, you know, she was upset, but she didn't, you know, she was there for me, and she didn't take anything out on me. My daughter, she just turned two. She doesn't know any different. So, you know, it was hard, but I still got an amazing support from my family. You know, my wife still loves me. My kid is still healthy. You know, life is great, and it was a hard time to go through. But like I said, now that it's public, man, my whole family's attitude has changed. We're just happy now that, you know, it's out there and we can move forward from this. And, you know, I'm excited to see what the future has.
Well, starting with your new journey with the World Series of Fighting now, is there anything that you've taken out of positively from the experience of the Ultimate Fighter? And do you feel you've come out a better fighter from the training and the experience?
Yeah, I mean, it was a great experience. You know, it's something that only, I mean, I don't know for sure, probably a couple hundred people have gotten to do, you know, at most. And I would do it over, you know, even though if it had to happen the same exact way, I would do it over. It was great. You know, I got to meet some great people. I got to train with some coaches that I would have never trained with, guys like Ricky Lindell and Master Tong. So, you know, it was a good experience. It sucked being away from my family, but, you know, I would do it over if I had to, for sure.
And Cody, just looking back at the show the other night when Miesha Tate went into the ring at Ronda Rousey to, you know, tell Dana what exactly happened, do you think Miesha could have given you a little bit more support, or what was your stance on that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's hard, man, because if someone else would have missed weight in that house and it wasn't me, I probably would have said the same, you know, things. And, you know, but the fact that I agree. I do take all the blame for it. Yeah. Everything she said was correct. Two things she did say, though, she called me pathetic. I thought that was I thought that was too far. And the fact that I didn't even try was, you know, just an outright lie. I mean, I had spent 3-4 hours doing that. I was up till 3 a.m. the night before, cutting as much weight as possible. I tried my best. My body told, I mean, I just had to listen to my body, you know, and I ended up quitting, but I mean, everything she said was fine except for those two parts that kind of pissed me off. That was kind of uncalled for, in my opinion.
Did you have you spoken to Miesha since then?
I haven't spoken to her since then. Leading up to the episode, she kept talking to me and, you know, assuring me that, you know, I'm a great guy and all this. And now I can kind of see why, you know, I'm assuming she regrets, you know, being so harsh, and that's why she was trying to write me all these nice things. But no, I haven't talked to her, and I don't plan to. But hey, you know, you never know what'll happen.
Sure, Brian Carraway's bantamweight, stroke featherweight as well, so possibly you might meet him down the line.
Hey, I wouldn't mind, man.
Great stuff, Cody. Cody, listen, just before we wrap up the interview, is any sponsors, anyone you'd like to give a shout out to, mate?
Yeah, man, I'd like to thank the company Ram Trucks. I'd like to thank Soul by Ludacris. I'd really like to thank Rev here, great people, really taking care of me in as many ways as possible. And also Future Energy Savers, their solar company.
And awesome. What's your Twitter handle the guys can find you on?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, man. All really easy names. Cody Bollinger. No crazy, underscores or symbols or anything like that.
Great stuff. Cody, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you. Really do appreciate the time. Thanks very much, mate.
No, thank you for having me, guys. You have a great day.
And that was Cody Bollinger, you dirty freaks. back, thanks a minute again to Cody for his time. Obviously, hit him up on Twitter with a follow. And, really interesting stuff, Mark, about the weight and his relationship, how it ended with Misha Tate. And he said he might meet Brian Caraway down the line sometime. That'd be an interesting fight.
Yeah, wouldn't be surprised. Now, a guy who's obviously he's signed his deal with World Series of Fighting now. It's probably pretty excited that he doesn't have to keep stum about things and can carry on with his career after the whole issues of the week is over.
Yeah, definitely a fighter to look out for. A 7-year vet and he's only 22 years of age. So, a lot, expecting a lot from Cody because he's obviously number one pick for Misha Tate as well. So interesting stuff there all the same. Mark, okay, let's get to it. UFC Fight for the Troops 3 takes place in Kentucky, in Fort Worth, Kentucky, I believe it is. Fort Campbell, in Kentucky on Wednesday night. In fairness, if we're honest about it, it's not the most exciting card in the world. There's no real big standout name on the card, bar Liz Carmouche, and obviously she's in the developing women's division. What are we expecting from this card? I actually think there's a couple of fights, and we mentioned to Dennis later on, obviously, that, about him being on the prelim card, maybe he should be in higher up, coming off 4 straight wins, and his opponent, Stephen Seiler's, 5 in his last 6, I believe, as well. That's definitely a fight to look out for. But your thoughts on this card, Mark, as a whole?
Yeah, I do think you're right in that there's a couple of name guys, there's a couple of guys on the main card who are there probably majorly because they have connections with the troops and kind of. I certainly don't think Tim Kennedy would be a huge draw, and Carlton Smith as well, has a big fan voice. And Liz Carmouche, completely forgot she was a former, was she a Marine? Yeah. It's not a thrilling card. I think there's a couple of guys I'm really looking to see. Tim Kennedy, I still don't know what to make of him in this division since he's come over from Strikeforce. I've never really kind of seen what he can do, but Should he be fighting? Is this the kind of level of fighter he's after?
Well, it was obviously supposed to be Machida, but we got to see Machida obviously last week in Manchester. Natal's coming off some good performances lately, and obviously stepped up and took this fight in short notice. So it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, he beat Torn Trong last time out in Joe Saffarino at Belfort Rockhill back in May, and Sean Spencer before that, and he lost to Andrew Craig. If you remember Andrew Craig's highlight reel. Head kick knockout was an absolute peach that he caught in a towel, but on 3 straight. So it's an interesting one. It's sort of like a development fight, really. Yeah. Tim Kennedy, he's not going to set the world on fire with his fighting style, but obviously, being Fight for the Troops, Tim Kennedy's obviously a US war hero. So, he's one guy that you're going to have on the card. Also obviously, Liz Carmouche, as you mentioned, and Colton Smith. So there's a strong... military background that's on this card, and it's good for these guys to give back, obviously, in a way. But one fight I've mentioned I'm really looking forward to actually is Colton Smith and Michael Chiesa, which is going to be a fight. Obviously, Michael lost last time out. Who was he lost to, Mark? It was the UFC on Fox card. It was Jorge Masvidal. He lost to Johnson versus Moraga back in July. So he'll be looking to avenge that loss and try and get that that choke back on track. So that's one I'm definitely looking forward to. And what are you going to expect from Colton Smith? Colton needs to bounce back as well. Obviously, coming off a loss in his last fight also to Robert Whitaker, where he got pretty thumped around, Mark, if it's fair to say.
I think we both think that. Well, I certainly think that Michael Chiesa dealt with the whole Masvidal loss very badly and very poorly. Not very sportsmanlike at the time that he actually jumped out. He ran out of the cage and wasn't even there when the arm was being raised of Masvidal. It was a bit kind of depressing to watch a guy like that who kind of had a lot of goodwill and favour after coming off the season of Tough that he won. Colton Smith, he's a tough guy, he's a grinder, he's a wrestler, you know what you're going to get every time with him. And a lot of people, I've heard a lot of kind of experts kind of stating that they think that Chiesa is a bit of a one-trick pony, but he's damn good at that one trick. I think that the UFC want big things for Chiesa. They want to see him be a big name. He hasn't really come through properly, and I don't know, I think they're a good matchup for each other. I think that it's probably going to be more in favour of Colton Smith now. I think he could grind out a very, very ugly victory in this over 3 rounds.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go Mike Chiesa. I think Mike Chiesa is going to choke out Colton Smith in the deck. I'm going to go second round choke. Another fight that obviously sticks out in the card is Jorge Masvidal versus Rustam Khabibov. Khabibov obviously fighting down in Jackson's. Coming off some, you know, he's put together a big win streak now. He's only lost one fight in his career, and he's on a 5-fight win streak. And, you know, Jorge Masvidal coming off a really big win also. When was it? Against Michael Chiesa. Jesus, that's what we were just talking about. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting fight. He's trying to make it 4 straight wins. So, you know, it's one I'm definitely going to look out for. And this guy, you know, he's very good submissions. Masvidal, obviously, we saw him in Strikeforce. I'm going to go with them. You know, I'm going to go here with them. Masvidal upset win, I think, Mark. I'm not, you know, Khabibov, you know, he looks like a beast. But I think, you know, the experience of being around the big shows could stand to Masvidal in this one.
Oh, do you not remember that Vince Bichelle fight? Vince Bichelle sent to hell with those Sambo throws.
Oh, that was
Khabibov. Oh, that was Khabibov, all right. Oh, no, you're not going back on that one, Niall, so easy. Yeah, Khabibov is one dangerous, dangerous guy. And I think that since he's started working with Greg Jackson and Jackson Winklejohns in New Mexico, I think that the future is only bright. This guy could be a real contender. I'm
going
to say...
I'm going back on that completely, what I just said. I was getting him confused with Amagov, if I'm honest. I promise that. I'm going with an Amagov or a Khabibov. There we go. Khabibov victory by submission or judo throws or sambo throws, should I say. He's going to knock him out with a sambo throw. There we go, Mark.
Don't worry, there's loads of room to jump on the bus now, Niall. I think it is going to be a bit crazy, but I think I see him making a big statement here. Round two, probably a lot of danger and a lot of aggression, and yeah, it's going to be mental.
I'm telling you, I'm getting confused with all the Russians around, Mark. It's crazy the amount of Russians around at the moment. Amagov, Nurmagomedov, Khabibov. Wow, amazing. All right, now, apologies for my little error there. I hope I'm forgiven. Ronnie Marks versus Yoel Romero. It's going to be an interesting one. Marks is a guy that's definitely impressed me in the UFC so far. Obviously, he's fought mainly on the Brazilian cards, but, you know, coming, I think it's, what's 7 straight, Mark? 6 straight. Coming off a great win against Andrew Craig, a decision win. So I'm going to go with Ronnie Marks in this. He's an interesting fighter. We saw Romero win against Clifford Starks. Clifford Starks was cut after that fight. It was a lovely flying knee, and he jumped on him to get the finish there. And that it's going to be an interesting fight, but I think Ronnie Marks takes this, Mark. And I'm going to go with a Marks. I think Marks is going to get a decision because that seems to be the theme. And I just don't see where he stops him, but I see him, you know, eking out a decision victory in this, Mark.
Yeah, can't disagree. I totally agree with you on that one. Not, yeah. I'd say that I'm actually really more so looking forward to this Liz Carmouche fight, because I think with the new influx of women that are coming in from this season's Ultimate Fighter, I think it's going to be very important, because she really captured everyone's imaginations with her first battle with Ronda Rousey, and her prime time, the shows building it up, really told more her story than Ronda's, and actually made her come across very well to the fans. I think it's going to be very interesting when she goes up against a really tough girl in Alexis Davis. I think this is going to be a fascinating fight. I really don't know.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this as well. Obviously, Carmouche, you know, coming off a win against Jessica Andrade, and we saw how good Andrade is, and you know, that's how good, you know, how poorly Liz made Andrade look. Andrade is a fantastic fighter, coming off that win against Rosie Sexton last week, but you know, I just think Carmouche possibly has the number on Alexis Davis. I know Alexis Davis has talked a lot about jitters. She was very nervous against Rosie Sexton on her UFC debut, which is fair. You know, it's going to be a smaller crowd, obviously, down in Fort Campbell in Kentucky. But, you know, I just don't see, you know, Alexis Davis, we know she's a vet, but I just think Liz Carmouche is going to have too much for her, going to get her to the deck and just grind it out. Like, Liz is so good at doing that. And I just can't see, you know, Alexis Davis, she's like probably number 4 or 5. I'm not sure exactly where she's ranked, Mark, but it's just Carmouche is that experience. You know, she's fought with the you know, the top names in the sport. I know Davis has as well, but I just have a feeling that Liz is just too good. She's too much on top of her game at the moment. And Davis with the jitters last time out, it could be, you know, how she handles the situation. And I think Liz is gonna win this fight. And you know, I think this could be stopped, Mark. I'm going to go late stoppage, possibly third round victory for Liz Carmouche, Mark.
Where do you think she'll stand in the whole...
Mark, just pass me the water, will you please?
Yeah, sure. I always wonder now, where do you think she will stand in the title picture if she manages to get a really impressive win here? Because it's going to be interesting. This whole kind of Ronda Misha feud is kicking to the hilt now. Do you think she's still kind of a top contender and someone they have real cachet about?
Just let me give me a quick drink to my water.
Sorry, I shouldn't
try. You're grand. It's going to be one of those fights where, you know, I think that this fight is you know, finally balanced. Alexis, I'm looking at the rankings here, is number 6. Liz Carmouche is number 4. It's just a very hard fight to gauge, to get to see who's going to do what, when they're going to do what, and how they're going to do it. But I just think Liz, you know, the mental factor as well of, you know, Liz said she didn't have any jitters in her fights. You know, she was just going to go into her game plan against Ronda. If she won, she won. If she didn't, she didn't. Obviously, she didn't win. I think that could be a significant factor. And Alexis did seem very nervous in her fight against Rosie. And, you know, a number of times she could have put Rosie to bed and she didn't. That was, you know, she didn't finish her off when she should have.
Yeah, no, agreed. I think that Alexis Davis was always, she was very smiley and giggly about on fight week last time out, and it takes a sup of water, is all refreshed. No, I'm definitely going to give it to Liz Carmouche. And if you think the fact that when she made her UFC debut against Ronda, they carried an entire card, they were doing the whole media tour, the press tour, it was a baptism of fire within the Ultimate Fighting Championships, and I think she knows where she belongs, and I think she really does belong around in that kind of number 4 ranking place. And I think Katsingano is obviously kind of a solid number 1 there, you know, kind of she's fighting the winner, but like I think Liz is always knocking on the door and she should take this pretty easy.
And best of luck obviously to Katsingano and her, you know, she had another knee injury and, you know, she's must be down in her luck at the moment, but I'm sure she'll be back within the next 6 to 7 months fighting fit. And best of luck to her with her recovery. Also, you know, the main event of the evening, it's not going to set the world on fire, but you know, it's going to be an entertaining fight, Tim Kennedy versus Rafael Nadal. Mark, what way do you see this going? Do you think Kennedy's experience will you know, be the factor in this? Obviously he's fought for, you know, world title and Strikeforce before. Could that play a decisive factor in this bout, Mark?
Yeah, I haven't put a huge amount of thought into it. I think Tim Kennedy is kind of, he's an experienced vet. Like, you know, he was one of those guys who, when brought over from Strikeforce, you were kind of going, I wonder how he's going to get on. Yeah, I think he takes it. I'm not entirely sure how. I haven't thought any thought to it whatsoever. I think he's going to eke it on a split decision.
It does. It's decision written all over it. Obviously, the last two fights from Rafael Nadal have gone to decision. And you know, in fairness to Tim Kennedy, a lot of his fights have gone the distance in his career. So, you know, it's going to be an interesting one. And, you know, he was very good in the fights against Luke Rockhold, obviously beat Robbie Lawler. But, you know, it just doesn't stand out. I know it's not the biggest card in the world. There's no real buzz around it. It's more of a show for the troops, which is obviously fantastic from the UFC to do it again for the third time. But, you know, I think Kennedy's going to eke out a decision victory here. He'd want to be careful of Natal's submission, you know, on the ground, because he's very talented. And obviously, it's just he's black belt, obviously, in jiu-jitsu, Japanese jiu-jitsu. That's Tim Kennedy. So it's going to be interesting stylistic matchup on the ground. You know, both guys are going to be good. I just think Tim Kennedy needs to be aware of the ground game from Rafael Nadal, and if you can deal with that, I think Tim Kennedy ekes out a decision victory here, Mark. So, Mark, moving on to obviously two fighters we have on the card this week, and before we get to the James Krause interview, Dennis Bermudez interview, we're going to put up first against Stephen Seiler. Dennis, you know, coming off, you know, 4 wins, Mark. As we talked to him, you know, he's a little bit disappointed to be on the prelims. Max Holloway, it was a controversial decision. I know you believe that Max Holloway took the victory. I probably do now in hindsight, looking back at the fight, and believe that Holloway probably just eked that fight. But you know what? It's a strange one, because, you know, he's had so many... He's always an entertaining fighter, Mark, and obviously the Grice fight was probably best fight of the year for me so far. What's your thoughts on this fight? It's a really interesting match against a very good opponent, Stephen Seiler, also.
Yeah, Dennis Bermudez has that weird switch that when he's down and out, and he's down a round and a half, he can just click back into gear. I think durable would be the way of phrasing it, where he comes hard late on and he's one of the best third round fighters I've seen. Like some of the fights when you think he's out of it, he can really put on a show. I think sometimes he needs to get inspired by having a challenge put in front of him. I think Dennis takes this. I know there's been a lot of talk where he wants to make a quicker night's work out of this one, and doesn't want to take, because obviously you take a huge amount of damage when you're in those all out rock'em sock'em robot wars. You're taking damage and you're shortening your career having those fights, and obviously I think he wants to finish with a knockout or a sub, but I see this going the distance and being pretty comprehensive unanimous decision.
I see this being fight of the night. Stephen Sauder obviously coming off a crazily good knockout win over Mike Brown at UFC Shogun versus Sonnen. You know, he took his head off within 50 seconds. The experienced vet that is Mike Brown. So that was a very impressive win. And obviously before that, Kurt Hollibaugh at UFC 159. And his only loss in his last five is to Darren Elkins. And you know, Darren Elkins is a top 10 guy in this division. So interesting stuff all the same. I'm just surprised, Mark, this fight isn't on, you know, the main card. I thought it definitely should have been. It deserves to be on the main card. But a very interesting fight all the same. I'm going to go with a Dennis Bermudez victory. I think it's going to be an absolute rock'em sock'em battle, and I'm going to go fight of the night, and I think it's going to go decision, and a decision is going to go the way of Mr. Bermudez. So let's get to the next interview of the day with Dennis Bermudez, who goes up against Stephen Sauder at UFC Fight for the Troops 3, and we'll be back to talk with James Krause. Check it out, guys.
Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Talking Brawl.
Delighted to welcome back on the show Dennis Bermudez, who goes up against Stephen Sauder this Wednesday night in Kentucky at Fight for the Troops. Dennis, first of all, thanks a million for the time again. Good to have you back on the show. How's life been, brother? How you keeping?
Everything's going good, man. Just hanging out and relaxing right now.
Well, obviously this year you've had two wins and you've went the distance in each of them. A lot of work, crazy, crazy fights. What are you planning to go down this Wednesday night against Stephen Sauder? Are you trying to hopefully have a shorter night's work?
You bet, boy. I'm over those split decision battles. Can I get in there and get done and get more money per minute, you know?
Yeah. And what's the camp been like leading up to this? Has anything been changing? Any different training partners to replicate Stephen Sauder's style?
I mean, the training partners haven't really changed. I just try to go with some of the taller and lankier guys a little bit more frequently than the short, stocky guys. And then in terms of the last two fights, my manager thinks that I might have been even overtrained, you know, just that wrestler mindset of, you know, that more is better and constant grinding, and we try to knock that off this camp and you know, go into less workouts but a higher intensity.
Yeah, you just mentioned there, is there more of a scientific approach nowadays? Obviously, you mentioned there, you've gone the last two fights have gone to decision. Is there more sort of or in build up to the fights these days? Because you know the training's been done.
I'm just you know, doing sometimes 3 to 4 workouts a day, you know, in those other camps, you know, I wasn't getting the same intensity as I did this camp, doing 1 to 3 workouts a day.
Yeah. And Dennis, the fight's on a Wednesday, obviously, it's, you know, we're not used to them. The emergence of the Fox deal, you know, there's a lot more Wednesday night fights. What's it like on fight week? Is things a little bit different going into a Wednesday night fight?
Yeah. Like, for example, where we were staying right now in Nashville, like for Saturday and Sunday, the sauna is only open till 5, you know. So in general, I'd say the sauna a little later and then go home and go to sleep. So I haven't been doing that. And then even some of the staff around here is like, oh, man, these Wendy's are throwing me off because they thought I was supposed to do something today when I have to do it tomorrow. So. Yeah.
And it must be, you know, a huge honour to fight in front of the troops. How much are you looking forward to that experience on Wednesday night?
Yeah, 1,000%. I feel like I'm doing something good, you know? Like, I'm giving back a little bit. So I'm excited about that.
And what did you feel in your last time out against Max Holloway? When you've been through such a brutal encounter, a bruising war like that, are you thinking about the scorecards? Are you thinking about what's just taken place, or are you still kind of up and the adrenaline still pumping? What the corner says to you in between rounds, does that matter, or is it all in your own head and just keep going 100%?
Yeah, I mean, that goes back to my wrestling days a little bit, and where, like, I could be getting smashed, you know, the whole match, but, you know, third tier, whatever, I'm looking to finish the match, you know, with a pin or something like that. I'm still not, you know, I've watched guys do that where they're in a match and they're losing by a lot, and they're just kind of like, well, this match is over. I'm still trying to score points and you know, break the guy and trying to win still, trying to find a way. I mean, that carries over in MMA as well, you know. But with that Holloway fight, I mean, I was taking a lot of punches, but they weren't really hurting me, so I was, you know, okay with that. I was just looking to counterpack with even a harder punch or something.
Yeah, and you know, the Holloway fight was great, and obviously the Matt Grice fight was, you know, contender for fight of the year. It was an absolute barn burner, where we like to use here on Talking Brawls. But are you expecting the same type of fight? Because Stephen Sarr is an exciting guy as well as yourself. Are you expecting possibly a fight of the night on a Wednesday night?
I mean, yeah, it's definitely a possibility. Steve is, you know, he fears no man. You know, I like him for that. You know, he'll fight anybody. He's you know, he'll stay in the pocket and throw. He's, you know, he's a fighter, man. So yeah, it could possibly be Friday night, but, you know, I've talked to my manager in the past, and we're trying to stay away from Friday nights. I mean, it took a little bit of a beating, you know, if you get Friday night.
Yeah, it's going to go away. It's going to go a distance if it's Friday night. Dennis, also, we know you're actually on the prelim card. Are you a little bit disappointed coming off four wins that you're on the prelim card?
You know, UFC is the best in what they do for a reason. You know, I'll get there. It's not a big deal. I'm not in any super rush to fight for a title or fight the best. It's just, as long as I keep winning, I'm you know, the paychecks are still the same. So
yeah,
you know, I'd rather fight someone that is an easier fight than a super tough guy for the same pay. You know, yeah. So.
Is there much politics that goes on in the UFC in kind of where you see a lot of guys come in and there's a lot of, like, we've had Conor McGregor come in over the last year and there's a lot of hype behind him and people can just jump to the top immediately, and some people are kind of a slow rise through the ranks and kind of then to the top of the main card. And when you have someone like Cole Miller, where do you think you stand in the division, and do you feel that some people are getting too much attention and you deserve more?
Well, I mean, what it comes down to in this business is, it's a business. You know what I mean? It is that. You know, on how promotable you are and stuff like that. I don't talk a lot of smack. I'm not, you know, super flash or anything like that. I go out there and I just try to get the job done, the task at hand. But on the same token, I do think that my fights are exciting. You know, I think you know, I always show up the fight. I bring the heat so sometimes I feel not disrespected, but like, hey man, you know, why can't I get a better look? You know, why can't I get some more publicity? But at the same token, I don't let that, you know, slow me down or drive me. You know, so I just go in there and do what I do.
Yeah, and come Wednesday night, you know, you get another win. That's five on the bounce. What do you look for after that? How long is it going to take to, you know, get sort of a guy that's, you know, lodged in the top 10?
Well, before we got Siler, I was supposed to have a top 10 guy, and you know, he got, you know, things didn't work out, and he's fighting Mendez now. But I mean, again, it's, you know, it's, that's fine. You know, we'll just go out there and put on a show and you know, maybe prove to the UFC I am top 10 guy.
Yeah, would you like to, you know, obviously fight Nick Lentz in the future?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm, you know, I think I'm one of the baddest motherfuckers in this weight class, so I'm not afraid to fight anybody. I train hard, so
yeah. And Dennis,
I know I'm ready, but, you know, it's up to them to decide when they think I'm ready.
Dennis, if we're to ask for a shotgun prediction of how this fight will go on Wednesday night, what way is it going to end and what round? Are we going to see another fight of the night? Or knockout this time?
Well, I mean, if Siler lasts all three rounds, maybe fight of the night. But, I mean, just like every fight, I plan on going in there and dominating every position. And not in a boring fashion either. You know, I've never taken a guy down late on him. You know, I take a guy down looking to really hurt him, you know, and take him out of the fight so I can get out of there.
Dennis, on a... Obviously, you know, as we mentioned earlier on, you know, it's different fighting on a Wednesday. Is the weight on point? How's everything going with that?
Yeah, weight's going pretty good. You know, we got we're gonna do a hard push tomorrow.
Yeah,
and then we'll finish up and get it down on weigh-ins.
Yeah, awesome stuff. Just before we wrap it up, Dennis, is there anyone you'd like to thank any sponsors? You'd like to give a shout out to?
Give a shout out to GovX, which is a it gives a discount to military military veterans and people that are in the military. Hayabusa has always been there for me. Titan Body Wash, and there's a few others. I'm just drawing a blank right now.
No worries. I'm sure that they can find on your Twitter page anyway. I think it's at Dennis at the Menace Bermudez on Twitter, isn't it?
Yep.
Cool.
Yep.
Dennis, listen, man, really appreciate the time as always. And listen, best of luck on Wednesday night, and I hope to talk to you again soon in the future.
Thank you, brother.
And that was Dennis the Menace Bermudez. And Mark, Dennis the Menace is one of my favourite comic books when I was growing up. So, you know who you remind me of? You know that Walter Softy guy that Dennis used to beat up the whole time? That's who you remind me of.
That doesn't sound very true, Noel.
It's harsh but true, Mark. Yeah, yeah. But log off your Twitter. And speaking of Twitter, Mark, you can catch us on Twitter at Talking Brawls. He's at Mark Moriarty 101.
He's at Noel McGrath 4.
And we're on Facebook, Talking Brawls. Miss Martial Arts Podcast, whatever, / Facebook. Just whack it in the search engine, you'll find it. And also talkingbrawls@gmail.com. So hit us up. And obviously subscribe to us on iTunes as well. That would be fucking awesome. So do that shit, peeps. We'd really appreciate that. Leave comments, do whatever you want. We love your support. It's always it's much appreciated. And we love you checking out the show. So keep posted with us on Talking Brawls. And you don't have to, you know, if you subscribe and have it on automatically, you don't have to come back and, you know, look for the episode. It will be there on your iPhone, iPod, whatever you want to do. So check that shit out and keep everything coming up in the support. We really do appreciate it, as always. So, Mark, Dennis Bermudez, obviously we've talked about that fight. And, you know, I believe it's possibly a fight of the night contender on the Fight for the Troops card. And moving on to a guy, you know, who's had fight of the nights in the past, James Krause, Mark, who goes up against Bobby Green, Strikeforce vet Bobby Green. That's a really interesting fight as well, isn't it? And I think people are expecting a lot from this this kid, James Krause. What way do you see this fight going? And it's another fight that I think is you know, could warrant to be on the main card, Mark.
Yeah, I think James Krause is just better than Bobby Green. I don't know, like, he really made a statement in his we talked to him right after his he made his debut, and it was just so impressive. Sub of the night and fight of the night, pretty making a statement. I think he's better than Bobby Green, and he's going to finish this pretty comprehensively. I'm not sure. I think he could go for a sub in round two. That's what I'm going to go for.
Is it a case of, you know, promoting, you know, the new talent, and, you know, are they feeding Bobby Green to the show? But all great respect to Bobby Green. You know, he's coming off one, I think, 5 straight wins in a row, and coming off a very impressive win against Jake Voltman, and then Matt Risehouse at Strikeforce before that, and James Terry. Is it a case where they're, you know, pumping up the young guy, James Krause, who was, you know, undefeated, as far as I believe, in his stint with Ed Suarez as RFA, Mark?
Well, that's fight promotion. I think that they inherited a lot of contracts after the buying out of Strikeforce, and I think there's some guys they want and some guys they didn't want, and just had to have fighting. I think that James Krause, he's 27, but, like, you know, he's a very experienced fighter, and he came to the UFC almost late on. He's late to the party, but he's really made a start. He's a better fighter. I'm gonna go sub round two. I think this is pretty comprehensive.
Okay, there you have it. That's from co-main event Moriarty. His prediction on the fight. I'm going to go James Krause finish in the second round. I'm going to go stoppage, TKO, stoppage for the crack. So, yeah, be sure to check that out. So let's get to the next interview of the day with James Krause. Check it out. Delighted to welcome back on the show James Krause, who goes up against Bobby Green this Wednesday night at Fight for the Troops in Kentucky. James, first of all, appreciate the time and appreciate having you back on the show. How are things with you? How you been keeping, mate?
I've been really good, man. Just been training really hard. I have my flight coming up. I have Tim Elliott, and his flight's coming up 10 days after me. So we've been helping each other get ready, and you know, just everybody on the team's clicking well. We're all doing really good, man. We're ready to roll.
Great stuff. And James, obviously, you know, last time out against Sam State, you put on a really, really impressive performance in your UFC debut, and we talked to you post-fight. How has life changed since the fight, and what's been going on? You know, have you got more recognition in the world, and what's been happening?
You know, as far as my life changing, I really don't think it's changed a ton. I think it's really important when you do something that gets you where you want to be, that you don't change it. You know, about the only thing that I can really think of that's changed drastically for me is I bought the gym that I train out of. So I own Grindhouse MMA in Lee Summit, Missouri. And, you know, it's the same routine, man. It's the same thing that got me here. I'm working hard still. You know, I pretty much, this is my passion. It's what I do for a living. It's my, you know, it's my life. So it's I haven't really changed anything.
Obviously, you're a known commodity this time after winning the two bonuses in your first time out in the UFC. Was there any jitters that time out? And now the fact that everyone knows about you, do you feel any more pressure on you to perform this time out?
No, I didn't have any pressure last time at all. Actually, you know, I didn't feel, you know, I don't know. I really didn't feel any pressure, any nervousness at all last time. I guess there's a little bit more pressure, you know, because I did so well last time out. I just had a great performance that, you know, it's almost expected that you go out and you just, you know, put on the performance of your lifetime every time now, which, you know, and I expect that of myself. My teammates expect that of me. And, you know, these guys really, really count on me, and they look up to me, and I look up to them. So I really don't want to let, you know, my teammates, my family, or anybody, or even my fans, you know, I don't want to let anybody down. So, you know, I want to come out and be exciting and perform and put on a great show for everybody. You know, I want to put on a good showing for everybody that helped me get ready for my fight. I want to put on a good show for the fans. You know, I want to give the media something to talk about. You know, so yeah, I've got a little bit added pressure, but it's nothing that I haven't dealt with, you know, 100 times before. So I'm ready to go. I feel great. My camp's been awesome. I'm just ready to roll, man. Ready to fight.
And it must be a big honor, James, obviously fighting in front of the troops. Can you explain your emotions going into the week and what it's going to be like on Wednesday night?
Yeah, you know, getting to fight for the troops is just an added bonus. You know, it's these guys are just so, you know, underappreciated. And it's great that I have the opportunity to give back, you know, just a fraction of what they've given us. So it's really cool for me to be able to put on a show for these guys. And I think that's why they matched me and Bobby up, because they know you know, we both come to fight and, you know, put on a show. We both want to be exciting.
Yeah, definitely. And speaking of your opponent, Bobby Green, obviously we know Bobby, you know, from Strikeforce, and obviously, you know, he's one of the crossovers from Strikeforce to the UFC. What are you expecting from Bobby in this fight?
I'm expecting an athlete, you know, a very athletic person that is not afraid to try anything. Can be very dangerous if you let him. Yeah, I think it's going to come down to who comes out and establishes the you know, who comes out first and plants their feet and says, this is me, this is mine. You know, and I think we both come out and do a very good job at that early. You know, we both are looking to establish, you know, who the better person is, and we're both going to big volume punchers. Neither one of us really have a ton of power with our hands, but we both have knockouts. You know, both are pretty dangerous everywhere. I think we match up very evenly together. And, you know, I think I'm just going to come in a little bit sharper or more sharp, if you will. And I think I'm going to come more prepared. I want this more than him, I feel like. And, you know, we'll see. That's why we fight, right? You know, we'll see on Wednesday. But I'm very confident that my team and I have come up with an awesome game plan and, you know, going to do well.
What's life like for you 3 days out from a fight? Is the hard work done and it's about kind of relaxing and now kind of just getting that weigh-in over with and then rehydrating again and being ready for step into the cage?
Yeah, you know, it's basically just about hanging out, relaxing, getting this weight off and putting weight back on. You know, I'm a pretty big lightweight. So I try to get out here as light as I can, and then, you know, I put some good weight back on, and I try to get big, too. So it's pretty much just, you know, cutting, relaxing, getting weight back on, and feeling good for the important night, which is Wednesday.
And what's the week like? Obviously, you know, the fight's on a Wednesday. What's like, when do you travel out there? You know, when do you do the media and stuff? Because it's obviously a bit different, you know, from the normal Saturday night fights.
Yeah, it's no different, man. You know, right now, for me, it's, you know, whether, I don't even know what day it is right now. I think it's, Sunday. You know, I don't even keep track. You know, whenever you're here, you don't, you just have one focus in mind, you know what I mean? And the days really don't matter, you know, other than sort of weight cutting purposes and, you know, getting ready for your fight. They all run together. You're not really worried about anything else, you know? So I'm just kind of passing time by, and I'm sitting right where I need to be sitting before I start really cutting my weight back. And, so right now I'm pretty much just playing the waiting game until, tomorrow, you know, tomorrow afternoon is when I'm gonna start my weight cut. And, you know, and then we just wait for Tuesday at weigh-ins, and then we fight Wednesday.
Good stuff. And obviously you mentioned there you bought out the gym, Team Grindhouse, and we spoke to Laura Sanko, who's a team member there before. How did that come about, or what's the situation with that?
It was actually owned by a guy named Brian Davidson, and he has another Taekwondo gym that's very successful in the area. And I think he just, you know, seen the passion I had for the place. And I was already running it. I was running the facility already. So, you know, it was a great opportunity for me to step up, and an opportunity for him to free up some more time for his other gym. And it just kind of worked out for the best.
And what's that? Is it almost a welcome distraction to have when you're kind of out of fight camp and when you're clicking back into gear? Is there much change in your life? Do you pass on a lot of the responsibilities, or do you keep up the same routine?
Well, like I said, I was already running it, running the facility before, so it's not a big change. You know, there's a little bit of added stress just because it's your money that you're making or losing now. You know what I mean? It's not anybody else's. So it's, I won't say that it didn't change anything. I mean, I didn't miss a single minute of training because of it, though. You know, I have a great staff and a great team that surrounds me that step up big time whenever it comes time for me to fight. So, you know, as long as I surround myself with those type of people, it won't change anything.
In saying that it's your money on the line in this situation, do you see a different class of athlete coming into mixed martial arts gyms now today with the kind of the exposure the UFC has? The people who would be top collegiate athletes and might have kind of went into the basketball or American football initially, do you see a lot of those athletes now kind of saying that I could really make it in mixed martial arts and this could be the sport for me?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think MMA is something that, I think it's one of the very few sports in the world that can be learned. You know, every sport can be learned, obviously, but I think with football and with basketball and baseball, I think there's something special that you have to have. You have to have that wow factor, that X factor that hardly anybody has to make it to that top level. I think with MMA, if you just get an athlete that has a hard, you know, a hard work ethic, I think that goes a long, long way, and I think you can teach people how to become good fighters. So yeah, to answer your question, I think there's a new wave coming that, you know, it's just going to keep evolving and evolving. I'm sure it'll cap off at some point, but you know, I'm thinking about the kids that are between five and ten right now are going to be the next level. You know, just like it's evolved to where it is now, I think it's just going to keep going up for a while.
In saying that, is there anyone training out of your camp that you're really excited about that we should be looking out for at the moment?
I mean, yeah, we have I have a guy that is from Uruguay that stays with me. His name's Gaston Reyno. Is you know, Muay Thai, started Muay Thai, and he moved to Kansas City to train with us. And you know, he's still an amateur. He's undefeated as an amateur right now. Plans on going pro soon. I think he could be something pretty special, and you know, I think he could do big things in the sport. You know, we have a couple smaller guys. I have a 25er named Cody Peterson that I think could be really good, huge 25er. And we have a couple other amateurs that I think could be really, really good, you know, if they stick it out, because that's what I did, man. It's not, you know, I'm not a crazy good athlete or anything like that. I never quit. You know, all the people I started with aren't doing it anymore, and I just stayed consistent the whole time, trained hard, you know, the entire time since day one I started. You know, I've been doing this for 8 years now. If you do something every day for 8 years, you have no choice but to get good at it.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, speaking of Bobby as well, your opponent, he's a pretty well-rounded guy. Is there anyone you've brought in, or what have you done in the training camp in preparation for the fight?
No, I didn't bring anybody in, you know, crazy special to be Bobby. I think I think my style matches up with him very yeah. well, just right out of the gate. I think, you know, in my opinion, we're very similar. But I think if you look up bad matchup, you know, for Bobby Green, I think there's a picture of me surrounded in red highlights. You know, I don't think I match up very well with him. You know, he likes to fight long. I fight longer. You know, he's good on the ground. I think I'm better on the ground. He has good wrestling. I think I'm a better wrestler. You know, and like I said, we'll find out on Wednesday if all this is true or not. But you know, I just feel like I'm just slightly better than him at everything, you know. So we'll see on Wednesday. You know, I definitely want to back up my words, and you know, I'm ready. I'm backing myself into a corner. I have no excuses. I'm injury free. I feel great. My camp was awesome. You know, I have no excuses. I said this with the Stout fight. You know, no excuse. I feel great. If I lose, he just, you know, he's a better guy that day. So, but I feel great, man. This is some of the best I felt. I changed my weight cut up a little bit. I think I'm going to be a lot bigger than I normally am, and I'm pretty big at lightweight already. So I'm pretty happy with everything.
And if we're to ask you for a shotgun prediction, are you going to get a couple more bonuses come Wednesday night?
You know, I don't know, man. I think it's going to depend on the rest of the card and how Bobby comes to fight. You know, I think with the case of Sam is I felt like I was winning almost every minute of that fight, yeah. but Sam's just so damn tough that he makes everything interesting, you know. So I think a lot of it's going to depend on Bobby. You know, I think we're both very dangerous. And at any point in time, you know, something big could happen. So am I looking for the bonus? Man, I'd love another bonus. I don't know. We'll see. A lot of it is just, you know, as far as he falls on the card. And it's a great card to win a bonus, though. You know, it's a pretty light card, no huge names on it. So I like my odds. You know, I like fight of the night or submission of the night candidate for myself. You know, I think, and knockout, I think, all of them are open. I really do.
Yeah, definitely. James, it's always great to catch up with you. And, you know, just before we wrap up the interview, is anyone you'd like to thank or any sponsors you'd like to give a shout-out to?
Yeah, man. Dethrone is my number one sponsor, man. They signed me right after the Stout fight. And, you know, it's such an honor to be represented by such a huge company that, you know, they treat me so well. And I have, you know, other sponsors too. But those guys have just really got behind me and backed me since that fight, and then all my teammates at you know, Team Grindhouse for helping me out and getting me ready for everything. So thank you guys for having me. I appreciate the exposure.
No, thank you, sir, and really looking forward to your fight. You always bring a good fight, so really looking forward to that. And James, really do appreciate the time, and best of luck on Wednesday night, mate.
Hey, thanks, bro. I appreciate it, man.
And that was James Krause. Big thanks to James again for his time coming on the show. Obviously, a big fight on Wednesday night for him and Dennis Bermuda. So check out their fights, obviously, on Wednesday night. If you're over here, obviously, on BT Sports. And if you're in the US, obviously, check it out in Fox Sports. And then if you're in Brazil, and you haven't been listening, check it out on El Globo. So looking forward to, you know, we can't complain, Mark. We complain often when there's not, you know, a lot of fights on. So, you know, we've been spoiled over the last number of months. So let's keep it going. And something to break up the week with a bit of Champions League on Tuesday with United. And then we'll be watching, obviously, on Wednesday night, Fight for the Troops. So, yeah, I'm sure one of us will be on the Twitter page. Mark's the Twitter genius, so I'll leave that up to him probably on Wednesday. Okay, guys, so let's move on. Obviously, there's other notable fights in that card to mention. You know, Chris Camozzi's going in action. Obviously, we've Eve Edwards as well, so check all that stuff out. That's obviously on Facebook as well. So other notable fights. But there's more this week. Obviously, we have Belfort versus Dan Henderson. Really looking forward to that fight, Mark. You know, it hasn't really probably got the hype it's deserved, and hopefully it might kick into action this week. But, you know, on that card as well, it doesn't really show a huge amount of depth on the card. Obviously, really looking forward to another fight. I think it could be, you know, a barn burner, Paulo Thiago versus the very impressive Brandon Thatch, who made a really, really good debut against Justin Edwards at UFC Fight Night, Conor versus Kamen. You know, really looking forward to seeing what this guy brings back to the octagon, because it was ultra impressive, and he obviously won knockout of the night there. And a tough opponent, Paulo Thiago, who's probably fighting for his UFC, well, not career, he beat Prezzara's last time out, but, you know, he'd lost two straight before that. So that's a really interesting fight, Mark, isn't it? Brandon Thatch was so impressive in his debut.
Yeah, no, a really impressive fight. Like, this card as a whole, it's tricky. I find the two cards in a week is always, it's hard to keep the media focus and the spotlight in the right place. Everyone kind of has a bit of attention deficit disorder, and when Wednesday's over, you're watching the post-fight press conference and you're trying to kind of build up again and hype up for Saturday, and it's very tricky to do. People have very short attention spans in MMA, but they're not that short. I think that this main event is really, like, Vitor Belfort, what more can you say? He's going to be fighting in Brazil. If they want to have, what I'm thinking they should do is just create a Brazilian UFC belt for him, so as he can just fight in Brazil and defend it there. I think it's going to be an amazing fight. I think Vitor could have the edge over Hendo this time. I always side with Henderson.
Mike mentions him later.
Really? Oh shit, Mike does. Mike is still a very good close friend with Vitor Belfort. So no, I'm going to give the edge to Vitor with a crazy knockout.
Yeah, just before we mention that fight in more detail, Marks, another guy that sticks out in this card, Daniel Serafian. Obviously, you know, two fights back in CB Dolloway, where he got that horrible decision in Brazil. I thought he won the fight. That's going to be an interesting fight against Cesar Ferreira. Both guys coming off wins, so check that one out as well. But, you know, Vitor Belfort, Dan Henderson, Mark, it's a really interesting fight, because I think, you know, Dan's going to try and, you know, get the fight dirty and not let Vitor, as we've seen Vitor in his last few fights, with that, you know, beautiful flow and knockout power that we've seen against Bisping and Rockhold, where he's just been explosive. It's a fact that if Dan can get this fight dirty, does Belfort, you know, is he going to go into that game where he gets the triangle from the bottom, if, you know, Dan's going to try and go for the ground and pound and or whatever? What way is this fight going to go? Because stylistically, it is a very, you know, interesting matchup with two sort of, probably, yeah, legends of the sport, really.
Yeah, there is a chance that it could go into crazy Rock'em Sock'em Robot style, and both guys swinging for the fences. There comes a point when Dan Henderson might have to start to kind of change his style of attack, but the guy, you know, he fights the same, and you know what you're going to get of him. I just remember when we were going into the whole Machida fight against Henderson, and everyone thought it was going to be this amazing matchup, and then you kind of go, of course that's what a matchup between Dan Henderson and Lyoto Machida looks like. Of course it's going to be elusive, and just Henderson's not going to have the power. I think that Henderson doesn't have the power to beat this new souped up slightly version of Belfort. I think he's better now than Henderson is, and I'd say this finishes in a second round knockout.
Souped up, Mark, why would you use a word like that? I agree with you. I think that the problem with this fight, the problem for Dan Henderson, you know, Dan's not getting any younger, and, you know, coming off that fight three fights back against, you know, Maurizio Shogun Rui, like, you know, in the next fight against them, Machida, you know, you could see a Dan Henderson that was, you know, tired. He looked tired, you know. These big fights have taken their toll. You know, he's beaten Fedor. You know, the guy's probably going to be a potential UFC Hall of Famer.
Oh, yeah.
But that's the problem, Mark. It's, you know, it's about whether you can keep doing it at the very highest level. And I think Vitor is obviously on a roll. Now, Dan's lost two on the bounce, Lyoto Machida and Rashad Evans, both by decision. But, you know, it's just, I think Vitor's power, his confidence. Vitor's a very, you know, confidence means a lot to him, and he's a confidence fighter in many respects. So I'm going to go with Vitor. I'm actually think, you know, it's hard to finish Dan Henderson, but I think Vitor, you know, possibly finishes this in the third or fourth round. Obviously, it's a five-round fight. I think we're in for a really, really good fight, but I'm going to go with Vitor Belfort. I can see him finishing this fight. I think his power that he's displayed in the last couple of fights, and obviously earlier on in his career, and, you know, he's a whole host of a highlight reel career. I just think it's going to be another one to that list, and I think Vitor, you know, moves on with a victory. I'd like to see Dan win. I'm a big admirer of Dan, but, you know, us being you know, reporters in the sport, Mark, we can't have the fan attitude. So, you know, head has to rule the heart in this occasion. I'm going to go with a Vitor victory. But no, card I'm really looking forward to, Mark. You know, there's a few interesting fights. We always see interesting fights in this Brazilian card. So, guys, yeah, just check it out. It's going to be a good one. Obviously, the main event, you know, we don't need any, you know, build-up for it. It's going to be a barn burner, as we like to use on this show. So, Mark, just, you know, a few things that we've talked about Cody Ballinger. We've talked with Cody Ballinger earlier in the show. I spoke with John Lineker last week, obviously, at the post-fight press conference, and the whole weight issues. And then we've, you know, the unfortunate death a few months back of Suso Fajau. You know, it really is an issue that, you know, is really, in the last 2 weeks, especially in the world of mixed martial arts, and especially in the world of the UFC, that's, you know, it's got a lot of attention. does something need to be done about you know, guys cutting weight, and is it too dangerous, or what's the situation, Mark? Because it's, you know, it's really up in the air at the moment.
Well, it's the hard thing to say that, like I always said, that there was a kind of a vague solution that if everyone just moved up one weight class, it wouldn't be that bad.
But that's not going to happen.
But it's not going to happen, of course. The thing is that it comes from an ethos, and as Mike will talk about later, it comes from an ethos of amateur wrestling, and people are used to this, and there's a kind of a whole stigma about we have to have the big hoopla of the weigh-in the day before, whereas a same-day weigh-in would be obviously much healthier, and people wouldn't... You would make the mistake once or twice, but you'd learn from the mistake because you'd end up losing your purse. So, you know, I think it's basically a re-education of the fighters. And maybe if they started with the younger guys and just brought it in now as a rule and just had same-day weigh-ins. But, like, I say that, but I don't really think it's ever going to happen. I thought that this episode of The Ultimate Fighter with Cody Bollinger, it was kind of sad to see, because it does make the sport look... old school and dangerous. That sort of like running in saunas and being locked in there, like it's not healthy. And if people get weight cuts wrong, it just looks bad, and you don't want it on television, and you don't want it. It's not a way to sell the sport to new fans who might not get it. I thought the Ultimate Fighter this week looked a bit barbaric, and certainly if I was new to the sport, I'd be why are they putting their bodies through that to mentally break?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, Mark, and you know, one I completely agree with, and I think Mike breaks it down very well. And you know, Mike brings up, obviously there's been a lot of talk. We learned this week that Lil Nog, after learning that Lil Nog was supposed to be facing Gustafsson, you know, in March in London, he pulled out of the fight for about the seventh or eighth time in his career. So the rumor is, we heard last night, I said this to you today, Mark, that Jimmy Manua is going to get the nod to fight Alexander Gustafsson in London. That's just a rumor I've heard. You know, I was talking to a very reliable source last night, a good friend of ours, Mark, who mentioned to me that that it does look like Jimmy Manua is going to get the nod to get in there. But there was talk of Daniel Cormier before, and you know, Daniel wanted to make his weight cut at home. Daniel obviously being a wrestler as well. So, and we know he nearly died in the Olympics, you know, trying to cut to 205. So, you know, Mike talks a little bit about that later on. So stay posted for that. It's really interesting stuff. He talks Lineker, he talks Bollinger, BJ Penn, obviously, and Johnny Hendricks, who's coming up against GSP on November 17th at UFC 167. I can't wait for that one as well, Mark. Really excited about that. And obviously, you can catch, you know, Mike on his Twitter Q&A session on a Sunday. He did earlier on today. So get in touch on Twitter with Mark at the Mike at the Dalshay Diet. Speaking of Twitter, you can catch us on Twitter at Talking Brawls. He's at Mark Murray 1 on.
He's at Nomograph 4.
And obviously on Facebook, Talking Brawls at Facebook.com. Subscribe to us on iTunes, etc. So you don't have to, you know, beat around and try and download it. It'll come automatically. So subscribe, leave comments, all that good stuff. Really do appreciate it. Okay, so let's get to the next interview of the day with the one and only and the legend, the returning guest for the third time. We should give him his hat-trick t-shirt, Mark. Mr. Mike Dalshay.
This is Dennis Bermudez, and you're listening to Talking Brawl.
Delighted to welcome back on the show, good friend of Talking Brawls here at this stage, Mike Dalshay. Mike, first of all, mate, how have you been keeping? How's life?
Life is good. Doing very well. And just staying busy. Happy to be back on the show once again with you guys.
It's great to talk to you, Mike. You're a top gentleman for coming on at short notice as well. I only contacted you about an hour ago, so really do appreciate it. Mike, obviously starting off, you know, it's been the last 2 weeks has been a lot of, you know, weight issues regards fighters, etc. First off, John Lineker. I asked Dana White at the press conference in Manchester last week, would you be working with him, and he said that Dan Lambert from ATT was going to contact you. What's the situation with John Lineker?
Yeah, we've already started moving forward, developing a program, lifestyle-based program, to help him achieve his goals as an athlete, to get him, you know, healthy, the elite level of healthy. And you know, I love Dan Lambert. I've worked with him for years now, with guys like Thiago Alves and Nick Lentz, who are American top team managed athletes. And have a great relationship with Dan. I trust, I respect him 100% as a professional and as a person. So it was very easy. And then Lineker, of course, I'd seen him fight. You know, now I'm busy with a lot of other high-level athletes, but Dan made the phone call and said, hey, you know, do you have time for this kid? And I said, of course, you know, I'll make time.
Yeah, you said in the past to us that you've always, when broaching a new fighter, when you're going to work with a new fighter, you have to see, will the relationship work? Have you spoken to himself personally, and do you see kind of that he could adapt to the lifestyle of the Dalshay diet and that way of living?
You know, I haven't spoken with him personally yet. We've spoken through Alex Davis, his co-manager and interpreter. We will be meeting face-to-face here in the next couple of weeks where he's going to be coming to the United States, and we're going to spend a few days together and further establish the relationship. But in the meantime, we're going to develop a lifestyle-based program for him to follow, and then he just has to follow it. If he follows it, it's like a treasure map. He'll weigh 125 pounds. It'll never be a problem. He'll be the healthiest he's ever been. And, you know, you've seen it before. So we'll recreate that. If he doesn't do that, just like if any of us don't do what we're supposed to, well, we won't have the success we're supposed to. So if he's in, I'm in.
Yeah, definitely. And taking on a guy like John Lineker, Mike, is it a risk to your reputation? Because obviously, you know, in my opinion, I believe if John hadn't have missed weight on, you know, three of the four occasions, he'd be, you know, having a title shot now at Demetrius Johnson. What's your take on that? Is it a risk to your reputation?
You know, I don't care about my reputation as far as, you know, accolades or stats, let's say. My reputation is keeping the guys healthy and doing what's in the best interest of the athlete and bringing a very scientific and a professional approach to the art and science of cutting weight and peaking and periodizing your training and performing and staying, you know, healthy and balanced and such. So that's the reputation that I really hope to have. And if John Lineker weighs 128 pounds under my care, well, he'll be the healthiest 128 pounds of his career. But, you know, I certainly do have no doubt that he'll make 125 pounds easily and, you know, be the most dominant, you know, champion in that weight class in history.
We had Cody Bollinger on the show today as well, and who recently was in this week's episode of The Ultimate Fighter, and obviously a show that you've had a lot to do with coaching in the past. When you see something like that of someone mentally breaking on screen and filmed in front of the world, do you find it kind of sometimes it really shows and highlights the trauma of bad weight cutting? And I certainly felt that for lay people or people who aren't in tune with mixed martial arts and the lifestyle and the living of making weight, that it was probably more shocking to see someone crack like that than the actual fight itself would have ever been.
Yeah, you know, weight cutting does crazy things. Being on a reality show does crazy things to the mind. Being a professional fighter does crazy things to the mind. You know, so all of those things are crazy. I didn't see the episode yet. And, you know, I can't really judge Cody on his reactions, but I know that there was a pretty bad job with the weight cut, and he paid the price as an athlete. You know, the two parts of the contract, you make weight, you fight. That's it. If you mess up either one of those, you're out. So weight cutting is very important. It's very serious. And the better you cut weight, the healthier you are, the better you perform. And that's what ultimately it's about. So it should be hand in hand. It shouldn't be this battle, you know, the two battles.
Yeah, and we spoke with Cody earlier on, and he's reached out to you. Are you going to sit down and talk with Cody and possibly, you know, come to a relationship with him, because he's obviously signed a, you know, lucrative deal with WSOF now as well?
Yeah, you know, I'll certainly talk to him and see if there's, you know, any suggestions or tips that I can give. And then, you know, we'll get to know each other a little bit more. Of course, I'm extremely busy right now. Yeah, I have Johnny Hendricks fighting for the world title here. You know, in the next 2 weeks, we've been extremely focused on that. I have Nick Lentz fighting Chad Mendez on, you know, coming up, and Kelvin Gastelum fighting Court McGee. So deep into those training camps, plus BJ Penn. You know, yeah, I'm co-coaching The Ultimate Fighter this season with BJ, so I'm on the set. And also as BJ's personal coach for his career. You know, that's just a little bit of what's on my table at the moment. So, you know, I'll certainly make the time for Cody and see what we can do. But there are a lot of things he might be able to do on his own.
Pretty boring times ahead for Mike Dalshay, hey?
yeah. Life is boring.
Definitely. And as you mentioned there, Johnny Hendricks, how's everything going? We're just under, I think it was 17th of November, so 3 weeks out from the fight. You must be really, really excited about that one, because he probably is, if we're honest, the most dangerous opponent to challenge the mighty GSP.
We are extremely excited about this fight, about the way Johnny looks. This is the best Johnny's ever looked that I've been with him. I've been with him since before the Fitch fight. That's when I came onto his team. And each time he's getting better, he's prepared better, his weight's better, he's peaking better, he's performing better. You know, he's doing 6 5-minute rounds with extremely high-level, fresh guys. And there's no conditioning issue. You know, the problem is just we can't get as many guys as we need to keep getting beat up by Johnny. That's the biggest problem in training camp right now. We're traveling, you know, with the world, you know, working with, you know, Olympians, some of the best athletes in the world, just to be on the same level as Johnny athletically. And that's something that's very special.
As you said there, you've been with Johnny for most of this ride, this crazy roller coaster ride that has got him to this title shot. Do you find that working with people coming from an amateur wrestling background have a better crossover to that style of living, that they're able to push and they're more used to making weight, that's more of part of the lifestyle?
Yes, the sport of wrestling. I grew up wrestling, and I learned at a young age the discipline and personal accountability that was necessary to be successful. And that attracts a certain mentality, a certain type of person. Only certain people can wrestle and continue to wrestle and wrestle at very high levels. It's a very, you know, mentally, emotionally, and physically tough and calloused individual. And that lends itself very well to this Spartan sport and pursuit of mixed martial arts, ultimate fighting. You know, you have to have that same, you know, personality characteristic to be successful. And a guy like Johnny has it. I mean, he will eat steel and piss fire, you know, if he has to, in order to you know, win his fight and train. You know, so that's why he's a world-class athlete. He's going to be the new world champion.
Do you truly believe he'll be the new world champion, Mike?
I know for a fact, I know in my heart that Johnny Hendricks is a better athlete than George St. Pierre. He's a better fighter than George St. Pierre. And I believe Johnny Hendricks will beat George St. Pierre. And George St. Pierre is one of the greatest athletes in all time. I look up to and respect him, you know, and I think, but I've seen Johnny do things that I haven't seen other athletes do. Two world-class athletes, you know, there can be only one. I think Johnny's the one.
Yeah, it's definitely a fight we're all looking forward to here in Ireland anyway. Mike, just a question that was, you know, brought to my attention on Twitter this week. There was a couple of journalists and sort of fans arguing about this point. Daniel Cormier, there's been a lot of sort of, you know, mentions that, you know, he might be offered the fight to fight Alexander Gustafsson after Lil Nog pulled out. Can you just clarify something? There was talk, you know, that he didn't want to go because of, you know, he didn't want to cut weight overseas. What does it do to a fighter when he travels overseas? Does it affect his weight cut in any way if he's prepared properly?
Absolutely. Traveling affects everything. You know, sitting in traffic for 10 minutes or for 10 hours, that certainly affects your day. Changing time zone, sleep schedules, the bed, the mattress that you sleep on, the climate and temperature, the food sources, that changes everything. It changes the way you feel as a human, and that branches out in your, you know, chosen profession. You know, athleticism, of course, being where it's most detrimental. So it is difficult, but it's possible, because, I mean, that's what world-class athletes do. They compete around the world. Against other world-class athletes, you know, that's the part of the job and deal. But, you know, I understand if Daniel doesn't want to go over and fight there. Or, yeah, I would much rather fight in my own backyard also.
We had Luke Barnett on the show last week, who's another guy who you've kept in contact with and kept working with since the season of Tough with Chael and yourself. What did you think of him? As he seems to be a guy with kind of proper cachet who could be really making it over in Europe soon and be a proper marketable fighter over here. How have you managed the whole delegation as the Dolce empire has kind of expanded, of dealing with people around the world? And when you have all of these fights on, how do you keep focus on the fighters who are important, like, especially when you're coming into a Johnny Hendricks time like this now?
Yeah, I must have more hours in my day than the rest of the world. it sure seems like it. I'm really dedicated, and I care, and I support these guys, and, you know, whatever I can do to be available. It's this is a lifestyle, what I do. It's not a job or, you know, anything like that. It's a 24-hour day pursuit, global, you know, around the world. It's, you know, I live by the fight date. I live by the deadline. And I live, you know, with these guys on these roller coasters. And, you know, it's interesting. But I'm able to, you know, keep on track of it and stay on track of everybody, because that's just the way, you know, the way we work.
Definitely, Mike. And Mike, obviously, we know you're involved with BJ Penn and, you know, getting him down to weight. How's BJ reacted to, you know, being on your lifestyle plan? As Is he near weight at the moment, or what's the situation with BJ?
Yeah, he is 160 pounds right now, looking lean and strong and athletic. It's the best he's ever looked. And we're just getting started. You know, this fight's not going to happen until late spring or summer of 2014. And that'll be his first time, you know, competing. So we have so much, you know, off-season work to build him into just the next level of professional athlete. And he's responded extremely well to it. BJ is one of the smartest guys in the sport, not just one of the most talented. And, you know, he understands what the difference is in high quality nutrition and lifestyle, training in order to achieve his goals as an athlete.
You've worked with a lot of people who, like people in the press or a lot of fans would have considered like difficult characters when it comes to weight loss and kind of making weight, like BJ Penn and Rampage Jackson as well in the past.
Yeah.
What's the difference between building that relationship and someone who, is it just the want to do it or is it just the whole change around? Because some people seem to not have the aptitude, but then they get the kick in the ass that they need and they can do it then.
Yeah, you know, I mean, when you got, you know, a few hundred thousand or a few million dollars on the line, it'll motivate you, you know, to
of course
eat a little bit better, not drive through the, you know, the fast food spot. But it comes, you know, those that want to do everything in their power to achieve success, well, they'll focus on everything. From my approach and philosophy, nutrition, lifestyle, well, that's the cornerstone of anything else you do in life. If you're an athlete, if you're, the educated, if you're, you know, anybody, any pursuit in life, you have to be healthy first, then you can do anything. And that seems to be missed. So the guys that do embrace that and follow that and live that, well, those are the ones that compete, you know, at the top of the world consistently. Anybody can get there. You know, anybody can, you know, touch the top. But the guys that and girls that stay there are the ones that live the lifestyle, you know, and it's not work. It's just what they do. It's not a diet. It's just what they do. That's why they're always successful.
What do you think when, obviously, a few weeks ago when Leandro Souza died, unfortunately, in the shootout in Brazil, what do you think? Do you kind of go, eek, this kind of gives the whole process of making weight and weight cutting, do you think it just gives it a bad name and you sometimes have to defend the fact that you're doing it healthily and getting these guys to do it and change the lifestyle around?
Yeah, what happened to Mr. Souza is a tragedy. It's a tragedy for our sport. It's a tragedy for the world for that to happen to a young athlete trying to compete. It also shows that the misunderstanding and the lack of education on truly, you know, healthy lifestyle-based systems to compete at an elite level and to weigh in properly. And that's really what we do. I understand Mr. Souza was taking prescription diuretics.
That's correct, yeah.
Very, very dangerous. I don't understand why you would do something like that, so dangerous and so unhealthy, the day before you have to be at your healthiest and perform at your best. So that's what I do with my athletes. Every day my athletes healthier than they were the day before. If they're not, then we made a mistake. We did something wrong. So we would never resort to these unhealthy techniques. Now, fortunately, my athletes have always made weight and they've always done so in a great manner. And as you can see on the scale, they look amazing. They look like they could fight when they're standing on the scale. And then the next night, they're 20 or 25 pounds heavier, and they look even better. And they look better than they've looked in their entire career. You know, each fight, again, gets better. So each day gets better. And with Mr. Souza, what happened, it does shed because that gets a lot of headlines. And it sheds a really bad light on something that should be approached with reverence and education and information.
Definitely, 100% agree, Mike. Mike, you mentioned there, you know, your lifestyle it's about being disciplined as well. How much of a challenge was it to, you know, take on BJ Penn? Because BJ's been, you know, criticized in the past for, you know, being overweight and being not disciplined because he's such phenomenally good natural talent. Was that a challenge getting BJ disciplined to the way of the Dolce diet lifestyle?
No, not at all. BJ's one of the hardest training athletes I've ever worked with. And that's saying a lot. So I've worked with some of the greatest athletes in the world. I believe over 150 UFC athletes alone. And BJ is one of the hardest working. And this is already, you know, 6 or 8 months before his fight. He had no problem adapting to the diet. I actually went out to Hilo, Hawaii and stayed with him for a week. And when I got there, he said, "You're the boss. Whatever you eat, I eat. Whatever you tell me to eat." And that's what we did. So for that entire week, we just went through the day and we ate as necessary as, you know, we chose, and we discussed the process and what food was about and why we were eating certain things. And he got it and enjoyed it and lives the lifestyle very effortlessly.
And Mike, before the end of the year, or say mid-June next year, how many world champions will Mike Dolce be associated with?
Oh, God. You know, I mean, we already have, you know, guys like Vitor Belfort, world champion, of Rampage Jackson, of course, is a world champion. We have Johnny Hendricks, who's the soon-to-be world champion. I certainly believe that. Chad Mendez, Nick Lentz fights Chad Mendez for the number one spot. I think that's another world champion coming very soon.
John Lineker.
John Lineker. I mean, he's the obvious, but, you know, I really have to get in and start working with him and you know, make him, you know, or help him to be one of my guys. So yeah, I mean, it should be 2014 shaping up to be a pretty good year.
Definitely. And you mentioned, obviously, Vitor Belfort there. And you mentioned to us in the past that, you know, you don't have to do as much work with the sort of the older guys. They stay disciplined, etc. Have you had any contact with Vitor in the lead up to his fight next Saturday?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Vitor and I, we stay in close contact. We're friends before anything else. So yeah. Very supportive. And, you know, we rarely talk fighting. We talk about, you know, everything else that's important in life. And, you know, and I think that certainly does help fighting. I know that helps fighting. And, you know, it's nice to have that relationship with Vitor. But he's ready to go. He's another, you know, soon to be world champion. I think he'll win the world title at either weight class right now, 185 or 205. You know, or shoot, I could even see Vitor winning at heavyweight. I think he could beat Kane. You know, a 220-pound Vitor, I think, could beat a 240-pound Kane.
Yeah. Brilliant stuff, Mike. Mike, before we wrap it up, how much as, you know, we've seen you a lot, you know, your profile has been highlighted an awful lot this year with the UFC Fit. How much fun has that been? And, you know, a lot of people seem to be taking it on, and it seems really good fun. How much have you enjoyed that experience with the UFC?
I love it. You know, UFC Fit is awesome. It's our ability to help people truly be healthy. And that was the goal of UFC Fit. It was to put the best program out there that will help the most amount of people and get them, you know, in the best shape that they've ever been able to get into and kind of, you know, live that UFC Fit lifestyle, you know, the athlete lifestyle, the MMA lifestyle. And here's the easy way to do it. So I've been having a blast with it, being able to travel and, you know, start to, you know, build the hype. It's going to take off in 2014. That's when, you know, all the media is going to go into and they're really going to make a push and try and, you know, get the message out there that UFC Fit is available. And I can't wait. I know we're going to be coming over to the UK. I believe we're going to Ireland. I know we're going to England. Yeah, we're going all over the place. I'm heading to Australia here for 10 days to help with their launch, you know, in December. Yeah. I was just in Toronto for the Canadian launch in September, which was, you know, an amazing week up there. So UFC Fit's awesome. I'm excited. You know, I can't wait to hear the results of it.
So you're going to be in Ireland. Is that April or May?
You know, that's I'm working on it. I'd actually like to come over there and do a seminar series. I'm talking to a couple guys over here and getting out there. And, you know, because I get enough emails and requests for it seems. I have a great relationship. For whatever reason, you guys seem to like me and listen to me and want to hear more about the stuff that I have going on. And I'd love to come over there because I know how hard training the culture is, you know, just working with some of the Irishmen over here. It's a whole nother world, you know. So, but I see like some of the science is a little farther behind. It's hard to get, you know, some of that science over there to be practiced like it is here.
Well, Mike, just before we wrap it up, I have to ask this question. It's been on my mind all night. What was Mike Dolce handing out to trick or treaters on Halloween evening at the front door?
I was handing out caveman all natural bars. And it's amazing. Go to cavemanfoods.com. Check it out. And organic lollipops. And people would come and I'd say, we are the organic family. We're the healthy family. And we'd give some to the parents. The parents were like, oh. And they would eat our bars. And they were happy. The kids were like, you know, it's like, all right, you dickheads. But the bars are good. If they open up to eat it, they're freaking delicious. They're amazing. And they're healthy. We knew the parents would appreciate that. And they'd have 50 pounds of high fructose corn syrup and hydrogenated oils, yellow number 5, and all the other chemicals.
I see another book in this.
Oh yeah, we're already on it, man.
Mike, it's always great to talk to you. You're an absolute top gentleman, Mike. The guys can obviously find you on the DolceDiet.com. Where else can they find your great and awesome work?
I appreciate it. Yeah, the DolceDiet.com. That is everything. That's the clearinghouse. Also, CollegeDietGuide.com is a new site that we have, and we're putting a lot of new content on there. And it's about the College Diet Guide, the book that we recently released in October. And then you can always get me on Twitter at the Dolce Diet. And you know, I just did my Q&A today. I did about 200 or so questions for people around the world, and I'll keep on going throughout the night.
Awesome stuff, Mike. Listen, it always is. It's great to talk to you. Fantastic insight, and you know your stuff inside out, and it's a real pleasure as always to have you on the show. And look forward to meeting you in Ireland, hopefully next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's keep talking about that. When I get better, you know, a better idea of dates, I'll let you guys know. It'd be cool to meet up.
Awesome stuff. 100%, Mike, and really do appreciate the time again. Thanks very much.
Thank you, guys.
And that was the legend, who is Mike Dolce. Big thanks to Mike again. Always answers our call to come on the show, and he's a busy, busy man. So really do appreciate the time, Mike. Obviously, catch Mike on UFC Fit or thedolshidiet.com. Get on that stuff. Absolute top man, knows his stuff inside out. The world of weight cutting, nutrition, etc. He is an absolute a guru, to say the least, is Mr. Mike Dalshy. Big thanks yet again to Mike. Mark, it's been one of those weeks, there's been a saturation of mixed martial arts. It's been crazy the last two weeks. Obviously, we've Bellator this weekend, and, we've UFC on Wednesday and Sunday again. Anything, that stands out for you? What was the fight that stood out for you in the last 2 weeks? Was it Chandler Alvarez?
Rampage versus Tito, definitely. No, I thought it was Chandler Alvarez. Bellator, reflections-wise, I think they got off lucky. It was a great TV show, and it was a good card. So yeah, that would be the highlight of my week.
Definitely. And Mark, we've learned a few things. Obviously, Rampage has gone up against Joey Beltran now at Bellator 108, I believe. And we also learned today Barnett's to go undergo UFC-sponsored WADA testing, which is an interesting one. And, a lot of titles have changed hands this week. And big congratulations to those guys. Obviously, a former guest on the show, Daniel Strauss, who took the featherweight title at Bellator. And obviously, Eddie Alvarez as well. He's a former guest on the show here who regained his Bellator lightweight title. And he'll obviously go up against Michael Chandler again soon. Obviously, to be announced. I believe he's getting an automatic rematch, isn't it?
Yeah.
For the second fight, yeah, he is.
Eddie Alvarez is the first Irish champion.
That's true, yeah. He's a bit of Irish in him with, obviously being from Where's Eddie from? Philadelphia, the streets of Philadelphia.
Yeah,
that's the one. So Eddie obviously spends a lot of time in Florida as well with the Black Zillions, but a great win for Eddie and gets his title back. But, Mark, look, just before we wrap up the show this week, on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you about the week's fights?
Because there's two fight cards in a week, I'd say probably about a 6, because just my attention and focus is all over the shop. I don't really know what to be looking at, really.
Yeah, there's a lot of fights on, but definitely Saturday stands out for me, and obviously the two guys we've had on the show today, very looking forward to their fights as well. Two guys who always bring it. And obviously in 2 or 3 weeks' time we have UFC 167, so can't wait for that one. Hendricks versus GSP, and obviously interesting stuff there from Mike Dalshy on Johnny Hendricks. And I believe the camera or something was dropped in Johnny Hendricks and burnt him. It's second degree burns in his shoulder, but he's okay. He's obviously good to fight, so that's not a problem there. But just before we wrap up, as I've mentioned already, some exciting stuff coming in the next few weeks. Stay posted on the show with us. Obviously, you can catch us on Twitter at Talking Brawls. He's at MarkMarty101.
He's at NoMcGrath4.
And you can catch us on Facebook, Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts Podcast, /Facebook or whatever it is. And you can catch us on Gmail, TalkingBrawls@gmail.com. And some funny tweets we got in last night from a couple of the guys. So check our Twitter page and retweet your shit if you want to retweet it. So big thanks again to the guys we had on the show today. Obviously Mike Dalshy, pure gentleman, been on the show before. Also James Krause and also Dennis Bermudez, and also Cody Bollinger. Thanks for Cody for stopping by and talking about his Ultimate Fighter experience and what is in the future for him. So it's been an emotional week, and as I said there, we've some nice announcements coming in the next few weeks, so stay posted here on Talking Brawls. And big thanks to the guest again, Mark. I'm just tired now and I just want to go to bed. It's been a long night. We've been at this all day with a bit of a hangover. Just thanks a million, guys, and obviously love for you to subscribe on iTunes. That would really help out. And also, comment on Facebook, on Twitter, etc. Love yous. So from myself, main event Noel McGrath, and co-main event Mark Moriarty, it is good luck and good night. Chat to you next week. Cheers.